He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin of Lakers Daily, joined by a good buddy, somebody whose work I really, really respect, somebody who I did some work with this year over the course of the season, Ryan Blackburn of Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you very much for hopping on. For everybody who may have missed it, I'm going to put it in the comments right now. This is actually part two of a home and home podcast that Ryan and I are doing today, in preparation, some final prep, some final thoughts going into Lakers Nuggets. Ryan, I know we started last episode with all of the how are you doing and all that, so we're going to skip that and dive right on in. I wanted to start. I don't like framing this in like the you know, this is like real life stuff that somebody is going through. I don't like, you know, bringing it back to basketball, but Michael Porter Jr.'s life is like in a real tough spot, right? One brother gets banned by the NBA. Another one is heading to jail. Is he okay? Like, how's he handling this?
He was smiling yesterday as one, like about as much as anybody could possibly expect from somebody in his position. It was a, like just seeing him at practice a couple times, like he's, I don't think he's glowing with joy right now with the way things are going for both Jonte Porter. Obviously everybody knows that story, but one of the lesser known stories, Coben Porter, his younger brother, one of many, he actually unfortunately killed somebody at Denver University, DU, late at night last year. There were questions about alcohol. There were questions about, hey, why are you operating a vehicle, Coben? And it's a really unfortunate situation. And Mike has been at the center of both of those instances, not necessarily his fault, but as the just very heralded brother of one of these, like these, both of these situations, it's just been really, really stressful for him. So I think he's okay. Would it surprise me if it bothers him throughout the playoffs or throughout the series?
Wouldn't surprise anybody.
Like, how could it not affect somebody like that? That's just it's a crazy couple of circumstances that he's found himself right in the midst of, and he's very close to both of his brothers.
Yeah, I a lot of times athletes will say that the basketball is kind of their release, right? Their place to go and escape into, right? In the playoffs or something that you can focus so solely on that it kind of helps you get through this, right? It is just, you know, two just really, really tough situations. And going into this is, it's hard to talk about it in a basketball sense. That's why I just start by asking, like, is the dude okay? Like that is, I have two younger brothers myself. And I couldn't even fathom how I would focus on anything other than their well-being in these spots. Obviously with Coben, right? You know, the focus there is on the victims and you know, the impact of some poor decision making there, but it's still like, you know, from Michael's perspective, he's going to care about his brother. And then Jonte did something that is just otherworldly stupid, but again, all Michael sees is his brother going through and losing out on a dream, you know, and losing the opportunity on all this stuff. So
he has had just a rough go at it, man. Like I know that a lot of people love to clown Mike, especially for the podcast. And then like some of the things that he'll say.
Yeah.
He's had three back surgeries he played 81 out of 82 games this past year. It's insane. Like that's insane to think about for where he was, where the Clippers doctor before the draft basically said, you'll never play basketball. Like you just never will. And for him to kind of turn his career around like this has been a really, really awesome story. And yet it just seems like he keeps getting dragged into all of these other things, which is, it's an unfortunate aspect of it, man. He's a good dude who's just like, it had a lot of bad stuff happen.
Yeah. All right, let's segue awkwardly from that. I'm sorry to start it there, but it's just something my Slack like the lounge Slack like brought it up, and I'm just like, holy shit. And anyway, so here we find ourselves. We will now focus on the basketball aspect of all of this. I'm gonna ask you a version of the question that I asked Adam yesterday. And you know, this is kind of a unique situation where these two teams played a year ago, played a few times in the year in between, and now are getting ready to face off against each other here in another series. The Nuggets are a different team. The Lakers are a different team. LeBron and AD say that they are healthier, which seems like a pretty big factor there. I think we came to the conclusion that the gap has narrowed between the two teams in part one of our conversation here. Do you think it's narrowed enough? Like, are you worried at all about how much the gap is narrowed?
I'm really not. And that may not be what Lakers fans want to hear. No. And I completely understand that. Denver at this point, like heading into the playoffs, they did lose that game 81 that we talked about at the beginning, that one that they probably should not have lost. And it would have gotten them the one seed and they would have been like, yay, but it's not necessarily what they are most focused on. And I think at this stage, they flipped the switch once again. Last year, it was very clear from game one, round one, that they had flipped a switch mentally, that what was focused before was now extremely focused. And there's just a level of competitiveness that this Nuggets team in particular has. Jamal Murray has it. I think that's very clear. Nikola Jokic is a disgusting competitor. Like, that dude hates to lose. And he has put the team on his back in so many ways, in so many different circumstances, and loves to get the job done, especially against a team like the Lakers that is so, like, I think, central to some of the hurts that he had early on in his career with AD in the bubble. And like that one at that opportunity that they had at the beginning, they didn't want to ever have that happen again. And so I think that this Nuggets team, especially with those two guys leading them, Michael Malone kind of behind the scenes pushing the right buttons, I think that they are in a really good place right now. And I don't see matchup advantages for the Lakers that are so strong enough that sort of outweigh the matchup advantages that the Nuggets have on their side of things. I find it difficult to think about what the Lakers can realistically do against both Jokic and Murray that Denver can't necessarily do to LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it's the way that I've kind of phrased it when I've tried to explain what the Lakers, why the Nuggets are such a bad matchup for the Lakers. And it's that, like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the Lakers, when they're playing their best, when they finally accept the identity that, like, we've been begging for since they won a championship by being bigger, stronger, faster, you know, is, you know, when they're at their best, they overwhelm teams, they suffocate teams with being bigger and slowing the game down in spots and, you know, just basically running the pace at whatever they want to run, because they can do that. They can control the boards. They can get to the free throw line, all those things. The Nuggets are kind of the antithesis to that, right? Where, you know, the Nuggets are actually bigger than the Lakers, and they are actually stronger, and, you know, they have actually leaned into and taken advantage of the continuity in ways that we thought the Lakers were going to heading into the season. Unfortunately, Darvin didn't get that memo, and we spent, you know, three quarters of the year waiting for him to play Rui Hachimura. That isn't the case with the Denver Nuggets. They've actually built on this stuff. They did try out Christian Brown early in the year as more of a scorer and see what he could do there, and found out, okay, not quite ready for that quite yet. We'll focus on this role for you here. Is there anything, like, if what would be the first kind of plank to break that would make you worry about the whole thing buckling here? Is there like an early sign that you would look for here in seeing, all right, this isn't going the way that it needs to go?
Yeah, I would say that if Jokic is not putting the same pressure on Anthony Davis specifically in that matchup, then that's probably the one that I look at first, because that's where it starts, right? That's where everything with Denver is about the Jokic minutes. It's about the Jokic minutes and then the non-Jokic minutes. And going back and looking through these different matchups, I think the Nuggets have won the Jokic minutes against the Lakers every single time in the last 8 matchups that they've won. And they've actually lost the non-Jokic minutes all 8 times, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy because you would think that, hey, maybe the bench sort of overwhelms things for Denver. Maybe that's their weakness in some of these actual matchups. What's actually happened is that Jokic has been on the floor. He's been playing really well. He's been out there and been dynamic in ways that the Lakers haven't been able to handle for 40 minutes, for 42 minutes, for this godly number of minutes that you're playing only 6 non-Jokic minutes or 8 non-Jokic minutes at that point. It's just really hard to make up the difference in that moment. So if you're the Lakers, you got to focus on the 40 to 42 Jokic minutes that are going to happen. You got to find ways to bother him. And if that's Denver, you got to make sure that you're getting good shots for Joker as often as possible. And he's making those like floaters, the hook shots, the turnarounds, even the fadeaways in that case. And he's going to the offensive glass, which I know is something that AD has had trouble with against him.
Yeah.
If he is getting those shots and if he's staying relatively efficient, everything else is going to fall into place. The passing, the rebounding is going to fall into place. That it's just going to be really hard to stop what Denver's doing. So you got to stop Jokic's score. You got to slow it down as much as possible. And I know people love to talk about making Jokic a scorer. Well, if you can make Jokic a scorer and have him go up against Anthony Davis one-on-one and that be a 50% possibility as opposed to a 60 or 70% likelihood of scoring, that's where you really win the matchup.
Yeah, a lot of times when people talk about Jokic, I feel like the focus is on his defense because he doesn't look like somebody who would play good defense, right? We know so little about defense that like we're so bad at talking about defense that like we just like ignore the team aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
And like somebody like Cam Reddish, who looks like he can defend, is held in higher regard than somebody like Jokic, who doesn't look like that, right?
Yeah.
But is there anything that like he has taken leaps and strides on that side of the floor? But is there anything that you would still say bothers Jokic enough? Nobody's ever going to play him off of the court, but is there any way to get him out of rhythm on that side of the court so that he doesn't have quite as astronomical an impact on offense?
You have to surprise him first and foremost. He has to not know exactly what you're going to go to because
5-guard lineups, baby.
Right. Exactly. That'll be shocking. That'll be a little bit crazy, but no, I think the, if he doesn't know exactly what you're going to and he's out of position for when that action comes, whether he's being sealed by somebody else on a Spain pick and roll, or if he is, oh crap, I've got to jump up to the high side and really help out on this hedge. And then I've got to go back into recover. Oh, I wasn't quite ready for it. My timing was just a little bit off. And it's a dunk over the top. Those are the moments where Denver will give up some easy baskets, whether it's at the rim or at the 3-point line. And it's mostly on Jokic for being a little bit caught off guard. The thing with Jokic, though, is that he's become such a smart player on both ends of the floor that it's getting more difficult to surprise him in those moments. So I think that that's probably where I would point to. When he is such a, like, where he really excels at with the defensive stuff is when he understands what's going on. He can get his hands into the passing lanes. He can wall off somebody like Anthony Davis when you get the drop off pass. And then usually AD will like to push somebody else out of the way. Now, like, he can't really push Jokic out of the way. So I think that's where I would really point to, and that you can score in those situations against him, especially if you've got somebody like LeBron James coming down Main Street. Like, he's not going to get in the way of LeBron that often.
Yeah. Although after LeBron took his charge against Zion, I don't think he wants to get in anybody's way anymore.
Like, I think, yeah. How is he doing, by the way? Because I haven't seen a bunch of like conversation about it. Is his wrist okay?
I think he's healthy. Like, everybody seems to be as healthy as possible. I look, 99.9999999, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, percent of humanity would be dead if we got hit by Zion Williamson like that. He would cease to exist altogether. And wild apparently he might have a boo-boo on his wrist. Yeah. But no, I think that is a big, it's actually kind of a good segue here. LeBron and AD say that they both feel a lot better going into the series than they did going into the one that they had against Denver last year, where, you know, if you remember, Denver kind of rolled right through Phoenix, right? It went Minnesota Phoenix, right?
Minnesota Phoenix. They faced off and won against Phoenix in six. Although by the end of that, it was kind of a they won that last one. Dub.
Yeah. So you know the Nuggets, I think, were a little bit more rested. The Lakers, right? Not only did they go through two tougher, I think, series, you know, because they weren't as good as Denver. So you played two closer series last year, and on top of that, had to like basically sprint through the final part of the season as they tried to make up for the Russell Westbrook experience and get into the playoffs. So by the time they actually played Denver, both LeBron and AD, and especially by the time that thing was over, both those guys looked absolutely gassed. And you know, now they're saying that they're a little bit fresher going into this one. LeBron's foot isn't bothering him in this way, same way that it was, or he said that he was last year. Anthony Davis was dealing with a couple of maladies last year. They feel healthier. If they are like better versions of themselves, and that gap, you know, and that ranking of, you know, best X amount of players here, Jokic is going to be at the top of the list. And then if it is like a more of a gap or a gap whatsoever between LeBron and AD before we get to Murray, how does Denver make up for that difference between last year and this year? Because last year Murray was just thoroughly outplayed AD.
Yeah, he very much did, and that's one of the things that I'm a little bit confused about from the Lakers' perspective. I think there's a lot of hope that, oh yeah, Austin Reeves is going to slow him down. Not D'Angelo Russell. I don't think anybody really has that much hope there, but that Gabe Vincent could provide a difference, that Spencer Dinwiddie could provide a difference. And yes, those guys are different options. Those guys are different style of players that Murray will have to navigate in order to actually score. But I just don't see the big wing, the athletic defender, that the long, lanky, like Jaden McDaniels type, that's going to provide so much length and athleticism that gives, like, that makes Murray work really hard for so many of these shots. Like, I'm just not sure how hard he's going to have to work in order to get past Reeves, in order to get past or get like shoot over Gabe Vincent. Spencer Dinwiddie's never been a guy that he's really had to stress about, but maybe this is different. Maybe in a narrower role for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie or a guy like Gabe Vincent, that those guys just can play 10 to 12 minutes of good defense on him and sort of change some of the bench matchups. But I do agree with you that, like, I think everybody believes that LeBron's going to get his, he's going to be great. Everybody knows that Jokic is going to get his, he's going to be great. With Anthony Davis versus Jamal Murray, that's really where you have the question marks. And I think just from the Nugget side of things, I think everybody expects Anthony Davis to score about 20 to 25 points every game. Is the same sort of expectation there for Murray, or is it higher?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last year Murray averaged, I think, like 33 for the series. Like
32, 33.
He was incredible, like just absolutely incredible. And it was also like the ways that he scored, right? It was, you know, the pull-up jumpers in the fourth quarters that he just never seemed to miss. And, you know, it's become actually a meme at this point, the way that Jokic was throwing in anything from any angle late in the shot clock last year.
It's a great meme where he's throwing all the
It's just, I joke with Adam and I joke with Matt all the time. It's like, could they just try a little less hard against the Lakers, even in the regulars, like one time? I just want like the A-minus game, not the A++++ game that the Nuggets are capable of playing. It's a fun, it's an interesting matchup. I think that this is the two best teams in the West again.
Oh wow.
Like I think, you know, the Lakers beat the crap out of OKC this year. I still have the Nuggets as far and away the best team in the West. You could maybe say Minnesota, but they're trying to work back Cat, you know, get Cat up to speed. Phoenix, I don't know how I feel about Phoenix. They don't shoot enough free throws for me. This feels like, you know, another one of those series where the champion, I think, or at least the Western Conference champion is going to come out of this one. And I'm curious what you think this series means from Denver's perspective, because for the Lakers, you lose in the first round after being in the Western Conference Finals last year, you fire Ham, right? And you make wholesale changes to the roster. We know what that's going to look like. It's actually what I'm writing for Lakers Daily right now is like, what does the aftermath look like here for the Lakers? What is it like? What does it look like for the Nuggets? If by God's grace or whatever, the Lakers are able to figure out a way to beat the Nuggets here, what does that mean for the Nuggets moving forward? Do they make any kind of big changes to their approach?
I hear God is a Lakers fan. I think that's pretty clear from history. reasonable to me.
He's got those flags on his minivan, like from the three-peat era. Yeah.
No, I think so. Denver, obviously, it's championship or bust. Anything less than a championship would be a failure. Don't tell Giannis that. I think that if they were to lose to the Lakers in the first round, after all the shit talk that they've had, after all of like this that has just sort of gone on and like sort of discussing what has happened like between these two teams, it would be a pretty tough blow. I don't think that there would be a firing of Michael Malone or anything like that. I don't think there would be like is Nikola Jokic or Jamal Murray going anywhere? No. Like you're holding on to Jokic until like he says he's gone. But like Murray, he's in line for a contract extension, not like after this season, basically. He was in line for one last year, decided to bet on himself to try to go good all NBA, and then was not healthy enough to really get it. I think that they'll still probably re-sign him to the deal that they want to, but it kind of opens up the door to some really weird things. Like, hey, what would a world without Jamal Murray on the Nuggets look like? What would a world without Michael Porter Jr. on the Nuggets look like? I don't think they would change much. I think it would probably be like still, you run it back, you see if you could improve the bench, because that's one of the secrets for this Nuggets team is that as great as their starting lineup has been, the bench has been so young and so inexperienced and oftentimes so bad that they have had to really pivot to do some different things. So they would probably really look to retool the bench before trying to change up the starting lineup, but it does open up the door to some odd conversations.
Yeah. The starting lineup, I don't think should go anywhere. It's the best group in the sport, you know, unless you're moving one of those guys to maybe take a slight downtick there and upgrade the bench elsewhere, because it is a very thin rotation, right? Yeah. You have, again, the best five-man lineup for my money in the sport. And it's like Reggie Jackson and it's Peyton Watson and it's Christian Brown. And I like parts of, I really believe in Watson. I really, really do. Love the way he plays defense. I love his makeup and all of that stuff. He's young, right?
Really
young. Same thing goes for Christian Brown. I like a lot of what he does defensively. I think he's actually one of the more underrated defenders in the league. But he's young, and Reggie Jackson is Reggie Jackson. You know, he's a wild card, you know, and I you know, I'm really kind of curious, you know, and again, for Nuggets fans who are listening, I do not think that the Lakers are going to win this series. They have the longest odds before we see the 2-1 seeds get their matchup. As it stands right now, as Ryan and I are talking, the Lakers have the longest odds to upset their matchup here. And it's for good reason. I actually think the odds should probably be longer. I was hoping to maybe get like 4 or 4.5 to 1 on the Lakers to win this one. It's only 3, which seems really low.
That's a public thing.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's an interesting series here, but I've been so focused on what it would mean for the Lakers if they lose in the first round. But what would it mean there for the Nuggets? It's an interesting one because I don't know how much wiggle room they actually have. I want to get back though to the matchup here, and like with these two teams like playing such central roles in the Western Conference now for the last half decade or so, and given how much is, I think, kind of inherent to Denver's identity in the losing streak or the winning streak that they have over the Lakers, the losing streak that the Lakers currently have to the Denver Nuggets. If a loss happens early-ish in the series here, I think it operates as more of a wake-up call than anything for Denver. But is there a chance that like you lose a little bit of that identity, a little bit of that confidence, some of that like seeps into how this series might go?
If they lost game one, you mean?
Yeah, either one or if the Lakers get a split.
Okay.
If they're able to get a split out of the first two games.
I think it would sort of take the allure off of this matchup a little bit from the, oh man, the Nuggets own the Lakers. The Nuggets are, oh man, like it would remove some of that for sure. And I think the Nuggets would be left with, okay, we really got to focus up on this one. We have to make sure that like not letting the moment and not letting the mystique of that, oh, all of that extra stuff sort of impact what is actually going on. Because I think that there is something that's kind of not carrying Denver, but like if you just removed the win streak, if let's say there was one like Lakers win in there where they won one of the matchups in overtime or won it in late in the fourth quarter, it would probably feel a little bit different going into this thing, right? Like, probably feel like the Lakers could probably talk themselves into it a little bit more. Nuggets fans would probably be a little bit more respectful. But because it's been eight in a row, including four games in a playoff series, like there's a lot of people that are talking pretty wild. So I think that if the Lakers were to get game one or even get game two, that the Nuggets would be under a lot more pressure. And the Lakers, I think, they'd have the window open a little bit more. Is it going to happen? Maybe. Like, I think I am going to pick the Nuggets to win the series in five games, which means I don't think that they're going to sweep. Which means I think that there is going to be an opportunity for Denver to lose at some point, and it could be in game one or game two. And that would be interesting to track if it was at home, because I think it would give Lakers fans and the Lakers a lot of faith going back into LA, where you just get a little bit more comfortable and you have that sigh of relief that, okay, this is possible.
Yeah. If the Lakers are going to miraculously win this thing, I think they have to win game one specifically, but definitely one of game one and two. Like they have to get that split if they want any chance here. And look, that arena is going to be nuts, and this team has been waiting here for the Lakers. And hell, in the last game that the Lakers just played at the end of it, LeBron looked pretty gassed, and AD played really poorly in that game for the vast majority of it. It's an interesting matchup. It's a fun matchup. It's unfortunately one where like one team's it. I wish that it was, this isn't how the Lakers are built. This isn't how the Nuggets are built. This is almost like a heavyweight fight where these two boxers are going to stand in the middle of the ring and just wail on each other. There isn't like a dancer in this one. There isn't like a counterpuncher in this one. This is two boxers that are just giant human beings going in there and standing in the middle of the ring and throwing their best punches at each other. And unfortunately, and this is why the streak exists as it does, the Nuggets just have way better punches. And it's just it's a really tough matchup here for the Lakers. You did mention that you thought that this is going to go Nuggets in five. I would say five or six in the Nuggets' favor here as well. Short of the Lakers, winning the thing, like what would a game seven look like? Like, cause that's where it gets really interesting, right? The Lakers would have won three. They would have won at least one. I guess they technically could have won all three at home. But the Lakers, how would a game seven feel for the Nuggets and for Nuggets fans, if it was to somehow get to that point?
There would be some strong panic if it got to seven. There would be some really strong panic. Now, what I would like, this team has, like, this fan base has confidence in Jokic. They believe that he's the best player in the world. They should. They believe that Jamal Murray is a gamer who will show up in these big time moments. But in a situation where Denver was the favorite and such a strong favorite as they are right now, where, hey, things went wrong. Things actually went wrong. And what we thought happened did not happen in those first few games. And now you're going to a game seven against arguably the greatest player to ever play the basketball game. And he's coming in and you've got the Lakers, and there would be the metaphorical, oh my gosh, the Lakers whistle. Like, who's reffing this game? Is it Scott Foster? like what's going on? Like, how can we, like,
it's actually me.
What are we going
to
do?
I'm actually working to get certified right now, and I'm going to be refereeing game seven. Just a heads up, everybody.
Yeah, no, Tony Brothers and Musa Dagher and Scott Foster are going to be on there. Basically all the refs that have ejected Jokic. So we'll see what happens. But no, I think that would be a stressor for the Nuggets fan base for sure. Like, there's a lot of folks that would be very concerned. Would Denver still win the game? Probably, because they're the better team and they're at home. And like, that you've got the altitude, and it's like a 7-game series against the Nuggets. Sounds like a very physically taxing thing for everybody on the Lakers, including LeBron and AD. So would Denver be more geared up for that? Yeah, probably, but it would suck. That would be horrible.
It's like the Lakers played that. Now, they weren't the prohibitive favorites that the Nuggets are going to be going into this one, but the Lakers played the Celtics in a game seven back when they were in the faced off against each other on the championship. And I remember, like, my dad was, you know, when game six goes as it went, and you know, at that point that it's heading into a game seven, my dad had all the confidence in the world. He's like, let's go. It's going to be in LA. We have all this stuff. And then, like, over the 24 hours that led up to it, he just got less and less confident, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like at that point for the Lakers, you're playing with house money because you weren't supposed to be that far. And LeBron can go into a game where he can play a game seven loosely and he can play one freely. And the Lakers would have had some success against Denver. And I'm trying to picture it. It's hard to picture it because I just don't see it getting there. But that is the one scenario here where the Lakers could lose in the first round after being in the Western Conference Finals. And if they lose in seven to Denver, that probably saves Ham's job. I think that's worst case scenario, because you lose in the first round and you keep Darvin. But no, it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. It's a fun matchup, man. This has been the second part of a two-part conversation here with Ryan. We have about 1,800 people in this thing. Now, holy Twitter's cow. Numbers are always whatever. I do want to send audience to Ryan. He does a great job of covering the Denver Nuggets. He provides great, smart, intelligent, and entertaining content over there. So if you want to keep up to date with this series as it rolls along, follow Ryan at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, and then find Pickaxe and Roll anywhere that you get your podcasts, as well as YouTube, right? You're on YouTube.
Yeah, we're on YouTube. It's under Mile High Sports, which is where I work.
Perfect. So find all of his content. Shouts to Adam, shouts to Ryan for hopping on here as well. I'd say good luck, but I'd be lying. For that would probably be the thumbnail for this YouTube would be you flipping my head. So if you want to, please have at
it. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Perfect. All right. Thank you a ton, Ryan. If this goes the way that I think it's going to go, best of luck here moving forward for the rest of the playoffs after the Nuggets beat the Lakers. But until then, you know, I hope Jokic like stubs a toe or something. No serious thing. He's just like stubbed a little toe there.
Pool time. He unfortunately picks up a splinter in the pool like that. That would be unfortunate to say the least. But hey, thank you, Anthony. I really appreciate it. You do fantastic work.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week and all week, the way that you guys have in the run-up to this series and through the play-in and through the end of the regular season. Greatly appreciate the support. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. If you guys are listening to this in audio form, Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, specifically Odyssey, preferably Odyssey. And until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm going live after tomorrow's game. It's a Saturday game. It's going to be a Saturday night game. Probably have a little wine in my system. I will. It's not a probably. I will have some just to get through that game.
Hell yeah.
So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Ryan Blackburn. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you tomorrow.